Welcome to the Advance Your Art podcast, where we talk about the journey from artist to entrepreneur and everything in between. You've worked hard to hone your craft. Now take it to the next level with tips, techniques, strategies, and routines used by successful artists to grow their businesses and careers. Now, let's get started and have some fun with your host, Yuri Cataldo.
Welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
Good and you, man. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for coming on. It's my pleasure. I'd like to start off this morning by introducing the listeners to you. How do you describe yourself and what you do?
I'm an origami artist, a paper folding artist, and an Instagrammer. I do photography and a whole bunch of other stuff as well, but I think that's kind of the category. If Instagram is a category of of jobs, I run campaigns on Instagram, and the base of what I do and mostly what I do is centered around origami and particularly around origami stop frame animation and doing installations.
Mm-hmm. So that is very specific and very interesting, because you don't really hear a lot of professional origami artists. I mean, I'm sure that a lot of them exist. It's just, it doesn't come across my day to day. So I'm curious. So were there experiences or something, something that you had early on in your childhood or even later on in life that got you interested in specifically origami art?
So when I was, I think I was about 21, my brother asked me to learn how to fold just a little origami crane, which is sort of the symbol. I mean, we all know the crane that you see all over the place. Mm-hmm. And I folded that. It was for a project he was busy with. And it was just a habit of whenever I found a piece of paper, I'd learnt that design and just folded it over and over. It was a cool party trick. And, you know, it's like, grab the piece of paper, fold the thing. I'd end up tearing my beer bottle labels off and turning it into a little crane, giving it to someone, a girl, if there was a girl nearby, mm-hmm. whatever. And that's all it ever was. It was never anything I thought it could be, anything I thought could be more than just that. And yeah, that's kind of where I picked it up. And it was about 2013 where I started just looking for more designs. I found I was doing it a lot more often. I was becoming quite interested in it. I started following other origami artists online, and I saw, cool, I'm kind of interested in this, so let's get a couple of books, do a few tutorials online, and see where this goes. And that's kind of how it all started.
Wow, okay. So I'm curious then, because I'm pretty sure that's not what you went to school for originally. So if you wouldn't mind like walking us through your journey of what you went to school for originally and then your first few jobs before you got involved in origami art.
So I finished school in 2000, and I then went to university for about 6 months, didn't really crack on with what I was supposed to be doing. And my dad said to me, he's like, maybe you should take a few months off. So I took mm-hmm. the rest of the year off and then went back to study, and I went to hotel school. I figured I needed to get something. I didn't have a clue of what I wanted to do. Hospitality management was, you know, kind of something that I'd thought of doing, and I was interested in cooking and stuff. So I thought, well, let's just do this and see what happens. So I did that course and I finished it. But I think I initially just went into that because I knew I just wanted to get something that I could potentially fall back on. It wasn't something that I was, you know, I had this burning desire to go run hotels or run restaurants. Okay. But I went and did that. And as a result of doing that, I've always been into computers. I've had a computer in front of me since I was, I don't know, sort of 6 or 7 years old. So from once I finished studying the hotel school, there was an IT company that was looking for recruits to come work for them, particularly in the hospitality field. So mm-hmm. installing reservation systems in restaurants and hotels. So I started, once I finished studying, I went and worked for that company for about 2 years. I then went back to study after working out that my interest in computers and programming particularly was quite keen. So I went and studied software development. And while I was studying software development, I joined the university radio station. So I had about 2 years of radio. I then signed up to one of the bigger radio stations in Johannesburg. That was where I was living at the time. And did that for a while. And when I was done with my studies, I moved down to Cape Town, stopped the radio gig. And I moved down to Cape Town to use this new sort of skill that I had, which was the ability to program and code websites and applications and stuff. And that moved me into a web developer role for advertising agencies and small companies and stuff. So, yeah.
Okay, so now I guess I need to know, how did you then make the transition from what you're doing working in for web agencies in IT to then your career now as an origami artist? Did that just like did you just wake up and just go, okay, suddenly I'm done with this, I want to become an origami artist? Was it a little more of a gradual transition?
No, it was definitely gradual. I was still working in advertising agencies. One of the last jobs I had, I was never really fulfilled in my job, but I always found that I was sitting, you know, either bugging the person next to me or folding something. Mm-hmm. I always had these, you know, little tutorial on my computer screen when I was supposed to be putting a website live or, you know, making updates to an application or something. I still remember my project manager standing behind me the one day. And he was kind of peering over my shoulder. I had my computer screen open. I was folding this little, you know, just watching the tutorial of, I don't know, origami duck or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he kind of said to me, he's like, dude, what are you doing? You know, like, got to have this thing live. I'm like, you know, just give me a hand or just give me a second. I just want to finish this and, you know, I'll continue with my work. So I decided then, like, maybe this, you know, the working for somebody else and particularly in the advertising space wasn't really my thing. So I quit that job and then went on to another job, but I just thinking that maybe it was the environment that I was in. Maybe I needed to change places because I kind of enjoyed the programming. I enjoyed, you know, building websites. Mm-hmm. And all the while I had this little origami thing. I mean, my desk was always just littered with, you know, just around the screen with just these little paper creations all over the place of stuff I'd do during my lunch break or, you know, if I got there early in the morning. Mm-hmm. So I saw and people started giving me books. They were saying, you know, this origami stuff you're doing is pretty cool. I was like, okay, thanks. So I decided in 2014 that, okay, cool. I was going to take this year to just dedicate the entire year to getting better at origami. So I decided I was going to do an Instagram project where I basically found designs in books online or whatever and folded one different figure every day of the year. And took a photo of it and posted it onto Instagram. Mm-hmm. I had opened an Instagram account earlier in 2013, and all I had ever posted onto it was origami. So I just kind of, you know, carried on with that theme. And that kicked off my 365 days of origami on Instagram. I had about 120 odd followers, which, you know, when you start your Instagram accounts, people you know, friends from Facebook, whatever. And it was that year, it was like 3 months into that year that I decided that I was going to quit my job. The plan was, I mean, the origami thing was just this little project I was busy with, but I knew I wasn't really feeling my work in what I was doing in my day-to-day job. So a friend of mine came to me, he was like, cool, we want to start this company, it's electronics-based something, mm-hmm. which at the time I was kind of into. And I was going to do freelance work. I was getting quite a lot of freelance website, you know, just little gigs on the side, which I thought, cool, I can make money from that. And I always just thought to myself, well, let me just quit the job. The worst thing that can happen is I run out of money, which I had a little bit saved. I had about 2 months' salary saved. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, I could always go back to the job. It's not like I'm leaving here, you know, torching the place as I'm walking out saying, fuck you, I'm never seeing you again. You know, I kind of kept the relationship with all my previous employees and the people I worked with. You know, it was always friendly and good. So I knew that I could always go back to that job or any one of those jobs that I'd previously quit.
Okay.
And as soon as I did that, as soon as I had time to myself, because now I didn't have I wasn't really worrying too much about the money. I had a bit of money, but I was like, cool, I've got all this time for myself. But the origami thing was, this project was really starting to take a lot of my time and interest, and people started coming up to me, and, well, not coming up to me, but speaking to me online, and friends and family that were like, dude, this thing you're doing is really cool. Like, and I was just like, well, okay, thanks. The goal was for me to do one thing every day, or one little origami piece every day for the entire year. That honestly was the entire goal. I didn't worry about whether my account would increase in following, how many likes or comments I got on the posts, whatever. And so that just carried on. And about halfway through the year, I decided I was going to brand the whole project. So I called it White on Rice. White on Rice came from a friend of mine who would see my stuff all over the place. And the expression White on Rice means you've got it covered, you're all over the place. Mm-hmm. So she was like, man, I see your stuff everywhere. You're like White on Rice, hashtag White on Rice, White on Rice. I was like, wow, that's a pretty cool name for an origami brand. I mean, you know, paper's white, rice is Asian. Mm-hmm. And and the art of origami is a Japanese art. So I thought, well, cool, let's call it White on Rice. And as soon as that happened, I think the perception of the project changed. It was no longer this guy folding paper, in the little fishing village at the bottom of Africa. It was this origami-inspired lifestyle brand, which was still – I was still doing the same thing, but it was the perception of the whole thing. And my following started increasing, and slowly it got to the point where I got picked up by Instagram. Someone at Instagram saw my stuff. They were like, dude, we'd love to feature you. And that was in about, I think, October of that year. So it's sort of 10 months into the project. And I'd posted every day. Well, there was one day I skipped, but I'll get to that. And I just carried on with it. I got featured by Instagram, and that just took my following to, it was a crazy amount. I remember the day that I got featured, I went from about 10,500 followers to about close to 40,000 in about 4 hours. It was the craziest thing that's ever happened.
Wow.
But again, I know it's nuts, man. But I just had to keep reminding myself that it was never about that. I didn't start this project to – I mean, obviously, it's pretty overwhelming when you start getting all these notifications of whatever's going on your account. Mm-hmm. But I was just like, no, just stay focused on what the next thing I was going to fold. And that kind of kept me going through until the end of the year. And towards the end of the year, I started experimenting with stop frame animation, which is something I'd been interested in for a long time since I was a kid. Animation in particular, but particularly stop frame animation for some reason. I've tried to make music. I played guitar for a long time. So I figured I wanted to try and take sound, music, this new origami art thing that I had, and Instagram, and put everything together. And that's where I came with the stop frame animations, which is not something new. I mean, many people have done this, but I just thought, cool, let's just see what happens when I start putting that out. And as soon as I started doing that, I think brands started seeing, cool, this guy's got a bit of a following. He can tell stories with his origami art, and he can fold stuff. So it's like, cool, let's see if he's willing to do a few brand campaigns. And that was at the end of the year. My following ended at the end of that year on about 50,000 followers. And I just decided then, when I started getting approached by all these brands, like, cool, this is what I'm going to do. And that was, so that was the beginning of 2015. So just over 2 years ago.
Oh, wow. Okay. So I've never spoken with someone who has make Instagram their full time gig. I'm really curious on how this works now. So now that you've got this following and you've got corporations interested in you, do they reach out to you on Instagram? Do they find you off Instagram? Nowadays, do you go out and reach out to people? Do they find you? How does that business side work?
I fortunately haven't really had to go out and look for work. And I think that's because my sort of internet presence, because of Instagram, you can find me anywhere. So if somebody Googles, I mean, I have quite a specific skill, which is origami, the ability to fold paper. And I have a website, I'm available on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, everywhere, that I've put all my content out there. And I think it's just one of those things of, because I have quite a large following on Instagram, brands are looking for ways to promote their own brand in a more sort of, I suppose, a styled or curated way. Mm-hmm. And if you look at Instagram, people that have larger followings on Instagram have a particular style. My style just happens to involve or incorporate origami. But you'll look at any photographers or I don't know, jewelry makers or whatever, if they've got something that is a little bit different and they have a story element to it, then brands will reach out to them and say, hey, listen, we've got this campaign where we, you know, we trying to use, or we're going to be using what you would refer to as influencers, so people with larger followings that can help promote this brand that's either starting out or get more brand awareness or exposure. So yeah, I mean, I left advertising to get back into advertising. That's kind of what's happened, but I enjoy it now because I get to be creative. I'm not really taking orders from the client. The client says, cool, Ross, we love what you're doing here. We'd love to just take our brand, and if you can just do something cool with whatever you're doing, mm-hmm. and you know, and just tell a story in some sort of way. And yeah, that's kind of how, that's the business model. Whether it's sustainable, we'll find out. But for me, it's just right now I'm enjoying it so much, and I just, yeah, every time I think, like, you know, where's the next job going to come in or whatever, I just focus on what got me here, which is like, what am I going to fold next?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. So with this project you're doing and now with the corporate gigs, was it something that you just figured out organically? Were there, when they started coming in, were you reading books or speaking to other mentors about how, you know, to position yourself or how to price what it is what you're doing, or how did that process work?
So the very first sort of stop frame animation job that I got was from a company in France. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have a clue of how to charge for this. I mean, you know, I asked around, I asked a few friends, like, cool, so what would you charge for an animation? And then I'd say, cool, well, which I do like everything. So I do the animation, I do the design, mm-hmm. I do the set design, whatever, whatever. So I realized that all of those elements were sort of line items or chargeable items that I could charge a client for. Mm-hmm. So I figured, well, if I can just take all of that and together, it could be a bit of money because, you know, based on what I'd spoken to friends of mine who were working in, you know, either making short films or they were working in advertising, doing, you know, editing or sound or whatever. So I had all these, people that I could chat to about, like, how much would you charge for this? How much do you think this is worth? Blah, blah, blah. And just slowly but surely, I worked out that, cool, this is kind of basically what they're willing to charge, basically what they're willing to pay for this. And that's also what I'm willing to charge for something like that. And, you know, at the beginning sort of stages of it, I was still working out whether I could do this thing. I mean, I was literally, I didn't really think, like, cool, I'm just going to, you know, craft this thing and see if I can become really good at it. I was just like, I'm just going to do it and see what happens. And, mm-hmm. you know, right now, I mean, I'm at the point now where I'm like, cool, I can see that I'm definitely, I have progressed and I'm a lot better than what I was. So I can, what I'm charging for the work is, I'm comfortable with that. And okay. I've also worked out, cool, that's kind of what they're willing to pay for a piece of content or a series of contents. And also being an Instagrammer, I mean, there's no hard and fast rules, not to say that, cool, you've got 20,000 followers, you can charge $20 for posting about this brand on your account. There's no hard and fast rule with that. I think it comes with engagement. It comes with a whole bunch of stuff. How much, exposure they're willing to give you for it. Because, I mean, if a massive brand comes to you and says, hey, listen, we'd like, there's certain brands mm-hmm. that you just can't say no to. And sometimes they'll say, cool, well, this is what we have as a budget. It's not quite what you're willing to do the work for, but we are linking you. We are putting this out there with your name on it saying, cool, this is the crowd of people that it's going to be fed to. And yeah. Very often, every time it goes out to a larger audience, something comes back. So okay. That's kind of just, yeah, that's kind of how it works. And it has been working like that for 2 years now.
Okay. Well, that's great. That's, cause I've always been very curious on how that works. Cause I know there's a lot of websites out there that kind of talk about, you know, influencers and how to hire them. But you're right. I guess it's one of those case by case basis. So with everything that you're doing and your own personal, you know, origami art and research, how do you manage your time and focus? Is there, like, do you have a daily ritual that you do, or that something that you keep consistent, or how does that work?
When it comes to work, I keep it very loose. I make sure that I have enough time whenever. I mean, I'm always working. I think when you become an entrepreneur, it's like you don't really switch off. I think it's important to have specific times that you need to switch off. I mean, you can't be thinking about work at 2 a.m. in the morning every morning, mm-hmm. although, you know, that happens sometimes depending on what's going on. But for me, I have like a morning routine of, you know, I meditate in the morning, I have a breathing exercise that I do. And yeah, so I try and my weekdays, I try and structure as sort of routine based as possible. But when I get to work, I just know that when I'm here at work, whatever I've got going on, I'll work on that. And I'll make sure I get that out as I try work quickly. I do work very quickly. I'm a very sort of focused individual as well. So I know that if I've got something to do, especially if I'm excited about it, I can crank it out really quickly. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the time you associate doing something quickly with like, oh, the quality is going to, you know, it's not going to be as good. But I just have found that I get the work out and I make sure it's at least at sort of 80%, and pushing it to that, to 90%, the amount of time it takes me, is it really going to be worth, you know, the energy that I'm putting in? Am I really going to get the return on investment in terms of getting it out there and making sure it's perfect? I'm not a perfectionist at all. And I just see a lot of artists and creatives trying to put their work out there that is like, oh, but it's not ready to go out yet. It's like, just put it out. See what happens. You know, just throw it out there. And obviously, I mean, you have to put the work in and do, and make sure that it is of a good quality. But mm-hmm. for me, if I've got work to do, I knuckle down and get it done. I don't know if that's a proper routine, but whatever it is, it does work for me.
Yeah, I mean, if it works for you, then that definitely is sounds like a good routine. So you alluded briefly to this about just, you know, not being afraid to put it out there and just get it out there. Obviously, you know, being an artist, sometimes there are probably times when you feel apprehensive about your work. And definitely when you made the transition from your full-time position into being a full-time origami artist, there has to be some kind of fear associated with that. When it comes to fear, whether it's, you know, fear of putting your art out there or fear of new projects or even when you transition to a new career, how do you approach times when you feel apprehensive and fearful, and how do you push past that?
I think I make sure that my sort of my conscious thoughts and conscious mind, or my monkey mind, let's call it that, the part of me that's just like, oh, it's not going to work, man, don't do it, you're going to die, something bad's going to happen, mm-hmm. I almost have to coax that part of my mind into believing that it's going to be okay, mm-hmm. and staying relaxed, if you know what I mean. It's kind of, I just have to continuously like reassure myself, like, if this is sort of leading up towards me quitting my job or starting a big project or taking on something that I'm not quite sure I'm going to be able to do, mm-hmm. there are times where I'm just like, well, is it going to work? Shit, man, I don't know. And as long as I just stay relaxed and I just have to convince myself, and I've worked out how to do that, you know, through whether it's meditation or exercise or eating healthy, whatever, anything that is just going to take me out of that. I do find that just taking myself out of an environment that I'm always in. Mm-hmm. So if I'm in the office a lot, and you almost build up this sort of fatigue in terms of maybe not fatigue, but being in the same space all the time, it kind of becomes like, okay, it's very routine and mundane. And I find that I get a bit of doubt creeping in when it's just me in my office doing my thing. And it's like, okay, listen, let me just get out, go do something different. Mm-hmm. And every now and then, well, 9 times out of 10, I'll be like, cool, I'll snap out of it. And just push through it. But the fear leading up to it, I think, is all relative. For some people, you know, this what could be the most daunting thing ever. I mean, like standing up in front of a stage of people, or standing up on a stage and speaking to a whole bunch of people, for some is just something they will never ever do. Mm-hmm. But when I get that feeling, and for me, because I do speaking gigs as well, and when you stand there and you think to yourself, like, oh, I could never do this, for me, that drives me to want to do that, because for some reason, like, it's just your mind that's told you that it's going to be bad and it's going to be the worst thing that could ever happen. And once you move past that, you do it and you look back, you're just like, oh, well, it wasn't so bad. And what's mm-hmm. funny, like, particularly like when I quit my job, I had my head was just telling me, don't do it, man. It's going to be, oh, you shouldn't. No, come on, better not do it. And as soon as I quit my job and sort of 2 or 3 months later, it's like, you question that. You say like, well, was it that bad? And the very same mind will tell you, well, told you should have done it. You know, so so it's a broken thing, our minds. You know what I mean? Like it's that sort of that part of you that just doesn't want to agree with you, but then will agree with you as soon as things are going sort of as they should be.
Mm-hmm. Oh yes, but parts of our mind are definitely fair weather fans like that.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you, when you speak, what topics do you speak on, and what kind of gigs do you get with your speaking engagements?
I think because my story is very different, I get asked a lot to just tell my story. You know, how I made the transition from web developer to origami artist, or chat a little bit about origami, the art itself, which I now have quite a deep understanding of. Mm-hmm. So it's that sort of stuff. I mean, and I think maybe at some point it'll move into a more sort of, I don't know, motivational, inspirational space, because I've done the thing that a lot of people, and something I wanted to do as well, was, you know, quit your job and do something different. Mm-hmm. I've done that thing now, and I'm making a success of it. So maybe teaching other, and I think this just being here speaking to you now is about that. I mean, I just hope that someone hears this and they, just one person just goes, there we go. That's what I need to do. Get over the fear, or just take one thing away from it. So in terms of the speaking, it's just, you know, just being a reminder to as many people as possible that whatever it is you want to do, just go and do it, because yeah, you live once. Well, depends on what you believe in, but, you're here now. Just do your thing and just go be awesome, you know?
Mm-hmm. So with that, what advice would you give to someone who wants to, I guess, let's say, you know, quit their job and really focus in on what their art is, or someone who is an artist who just wants to make a more money or a living from their art?
Stop being so precious about your work. Generally, I think that is the biggest thing with creatives and artists. I mean, I've worked with a lot of creative people, and they very pedantic and like, okay, well, it needs to be, you know, that it's that whole perfection thing. And perfection is just, I mean, it's an insecurity. It's like you want to get it perfect, but who are you really doing it for then? You know, if you are really into this thing, because I think any sort of art or creative venture that you sort of go on, you do because you have an interest in whatever it is you want to do. And you're passionate about it. You don't have to be like wildly passionate about it, but you enjoy it and you enjoy doing it. And as soon as you start like worrying about like, oh, is it good enough? Obviously you have to be happy with what you've done and the work you've put out there, but just let it go. It's also the whole sort of thing around ideas. Like your ideas, I don't think belong to you, you know, so set them free. So just let them out there, because I think maybe what happens is when you come up with a good idea and you're like, oh yes, it's a good idea, I'm not going to tell anyone about it. Mm-hmm. Then for some reason you just think like, oh well, if I do put it out there, someone else is going to steal it. Mm-hmm. But if you've come up with one good idea, then you can come up with another good idea. I mean, that's, you are infinitely creative. That's what we are. We are creative beings. We make, we create. That's what it is. So, I mean, to be in that sort of creative flow state all the time, just continue to put your ideas out there. Don't really worry about the feedback. I mean, if you're getting a lot of flack and people are saying, dude, go back to your job, it's like, then, but even that, I mean, I'm sure so many artists and so many musicians and actors and anyone who's pursuing something that is seen as quite like, I don't know, quite different, they've all gone through that where, you know, they get told by critics and whatever that, oh, your work is really shit, you should go and, you know, don't quit your day job, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just don't be so precious about what you're putting out there.
Mm-hmm. If you were starting over now, would you pick Instagram again as your platform? Would you go with another social media outlet or even another website?
That is such a good question. I mean, right now I'm just completely engulfed in Instagram. That's, okay. I enjoy it. I enjoy, you know, speaking to people and meeting creatives online and just chatting to the people that I interact with and that interact with me through my work. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the platform, like we've seen with any other social media platform, has its, you know, it has its sort of beginning stages. And I think I'm quite fortunate in that I caught it, particularly here in the country I'm in, and maybe, you know, globally as well, where it was just starting to heat up. And it was like, because it was a pretty new platform. So, you know, 2013, 2014 was like there were a lot of these sort of 365-day projects going around. And the way Instagram worked, I think, was conducive to me and a lot of other people. I know a lot of other South Africans as well and people around the world that have used Instagram to get to where they, to create a like a full-scale business for themselves. Mm-hmm. But going forward, you'd have to have some sort of connection to the ether to know what's going to happen. And, you know, for me, like right now, it still feels good.
Okay.
In terms of using Instagram and this is the thing that I'm doing, but I'm under no impression, or under no illusion that it's going to be like this forever. So for me, I would rather focus on what my art is instead of like, cool, I've got to find the next platform that I've got to jump on.
Okay.
But in hindsight, I mean, I think I picked the right platform. I don't think I really picked it. I think it just kind of happened,
okay.
If that makes sense. You know, yeah. I was just like, cool, well, let's just do this thing. We'll put it on. I don't really like Facebook. Twitter doesn't work for me. Instagram seems cool. It's picture-based. You're going to post pictures. And that's what my thoughts were.
Sure.
So. But I mean, going forward, social media is, I mean, it's a big thing at the moment. And I think what's great about it is it's a free channel. Most of the people listening to this will have access to the internet. So just use those channels to get your stuff out there because I think the form that it's in now will definitely, change at some point. So, but right now it's working and I'm just going to ride it for as long as possible.
that makes perfect sense. What would you say is the best advice you've ever received?
I was told by one of my bosses that he just said to me, like, he was just about to leave, and he said to me, when you stop enjoying it, move on. And that just stuck with me through everything I've done. So if I stop enjoying it, I'd literally just stop doing it. So that's definitely one thing. And then the other piece of advice I got from my brother was, like, don't take yourself so seriously, you know, don't think that the thing you're doing is the thing. And it's, I don't know. We try to make these big, I'm guilty of it. And I think a lot of other people are too. You try and make so much more out of what you're doing than what it is. Cause at the end of the day, it's just this thing that you do and you just have to enjoy it. So mm-hmm. Don't take it so seriously.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Ross, this has been absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much for taking time to chat with me. If the listeners would like to hear more and see more of your work, what is the best way to do that?
So on Instagram, I am Ross. My name is Ross Simmons. So it's Ross. My surname is Simmons. Symons. Or they can just look for White on Rice. WHITEONRICE on Instagram. You should come up. But I've got a website, white-onrice.com. And I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook, but Instagram is essentially the main platform that I work off.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I've spent some time looking at your Instagram account, and I am completely amazed at what you're able to do with folded paper. It's I wish
Me too,
I was
man.
That talented at that something.
I tell you, Yuri, it's one of those things that I still when I see the things I'm doing now. I wasn't always able to do these things, and it's just, you know, I'm just heading towards those 1,000 hours, you know, just putting them in and just doing it as often as possible, and I'm enjoying it. So it's like anything, you know, you just practice, you know, talent is one thing, but I think practice goes a long way as well.
Mm-hmm. I definitely agree with that. Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Ross. I really appreciate your time. Have a wonderful
cool.
day.
Thanks. And you too.
All right. Take care. Bye. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Advance Your Art Podcast. If you like this episode, please go into iTunes and give us a 5-star rating. And while you're there, hit the subscribe button so that every single time I release a new episode, it will go directly to you without even thinking about it. If you're interested in hearing older episodes, please go to advanceyourart.com where you can find the catalog of everything I've done so far, as well as contact information and projects I'm working on. Thank you again, and have a great day.